Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Viva Mexico, Mike.
Viva Mexico.
We got a new middleweight unified, not undisputed, unified middleweight champion of the world from this past Saturday. And arguably probably the biggest fight of the year so far?
In terms of publicity and stuff like that, definitely not in terms of actual fight quality, I would have said.
Not in terms of fight quality. No. Man, you sound like a critic tonight. Man. But once again, this is the Last Round, episode 32. I'm Danny Z, along my co-host, Michael Shepard. Like we say every week, pretty much, there was another DAZN card. Probably their biggest one yet, honestly. So, and it was from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. But before we jump into all that, we have a special guest on the line again. We're on a pretty good streak of guests the last several weeks, right? He's actually in the same gym and trained by the same trainer, Andre Rozier, as Danny Jacobs, who took the L this past Saturday against Canelo Alvarez, calling all the way from New York. Chris Glover, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it.
No, thanks very much for having me. Yeah, I don't know if people were expecting a New York voice then, but you're not getting one of those tonight.
I'm sure it's a nice surprise. I'm sure it's a nice surprise for our listeners.
Yeah, another English accent.
I've got backup tonight, Danny.
I know.
It's got backup, yeah.
It's both of you against me tonight. Usually it's the other way around, so I lost tonight. But, you know, once again, Chris, we appreciate you calling in and you know, taking the time, especially because you are 3 hours ahead of us over there on the East Coast. So we appreciate that. But, you know, jumping right into it, Chris, you know, before we actually jump into the fights, you are making your pro debut in June, right? So sometime next month. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, it's actually not going to be in June now, and I will tell you why. It's nothing to do with myself. The show that I was supposed to be on was initially supposed to be topped by Rob Brandt in his WBA World Middleweight title defense, but now he's took the Murata fight in Tokyo, or in Japan, so the whole show's just been scrapped.
Oh, wow.
So the promoter, Corey, who works alongside, you know, Top Rank, he's rearranging the show for it's going to be first week in August, which, you know, it's an extra 5 weeks in the gym. So it's not the end of the world for me. I'm still learning. At the end of the day, I don't really deviate from my craft. I don't miss a session. I don't go out partying or anything like that. Don't get me wrong, I've had a good crack at partying in my life, but I don't anymore. You know, I've really turned me back on that lifestyle. So it's just an extra 5 weeks in the gym for me, and I'll be making my debut in Minnesota, just outside Minneapolis. Yeah, so can't wait.
One thing I was wondering, Chris. Obviously, you're from Liverpool, a big fight city in the UK. Yeah. You've got the Smith brothers, Tony Bellew, you know, the UFC's Darren Till. Are you going to be coming out to ZCAS? I know that you're a big Everton fan.
Correct. You've got it spot on.
I did wonder.
Yeah, I'm a, you got you,
I'm a big Everton fan, yeah. ZCAS, you know, obviously Everton growing up. You know, I was going to watch Everton from 4 years old right up until I moved away. I've been home and away with Everton for years and years, and you know, it breaks my heart not watching them every week. You know, not going the match with the lads. You know, like I used to. Shout out to the Brit coach there. You know, they're still doing the thing. And you know, I love going the match. I miss it to death. But you know, just people will probably say, oh, he's trying to be Bellew. I'm not trying to be Bellew. This is what I am. I'm, you know, Everton through and through. Like Tony is, you know, he loves Everton. I love Everton. So, you know, just to walk out, I'll never walk out to the ZCAS on a football pitch. So probably the next best thing is walking to the ring for the ZCAS.
Maybe if you fight at Goodison.
Jesus, I just want to get this one out of the way, mate.
He's throwing it all at you right now, man.
Got to dream big.
Yeah, I have, yeah. You know, but like at the moment, it's all, you know, my life's over here in the States, in New York. I'm very settled here. And, you know, for me, it'd be, I'd love to get on a show at the Garden. That'd be a dream come true for me, is, you know, not to top the bill, but someone like Mick, if Mick Conlon put for the world title next year at the Garden, I'd like to get on that undercard. That'd be something that I'd really push for.
So how did you move from Liverpool to the New York City?
I'll tell you the honest truth. I had a job at the time. I was working for my local council, we call it home, local government, known over here. I was the PR man for the council sports department. Absolutely hated it. Went out drinking one night with a few of my friends. And I went, I just want a new job. I've had enough. I used to live over here when I was younger. Went to college over here and I always wanted to come back. And I applied for a job coaching football or soccer, as you know, it's known over here.
Football, you were right, Chris.
Yeah, I was right the first time. I played football in Division One in college over here. So, you know, I've got my coaching badges through the years. And I put in just an application to come over here and work. And I got the job. So that's how I ended up moving over. And then I got another job. And then I got a better job. So, you know, which has backed me for all my paperwork that you need to do. As you know, it's not easy being British living over here.
Mm.
So that's how I still work. I still work 5 nights a week coaching kids.
So you're kind of like, who is it, the WBA world champion, Andrew Cancio, who just won the belt from Machado, who also works five days a week out here. So you're kind of in the same boat, right?
Yeah. Hopefully one day I'll be as good as him. He's a tremendous fighter. And one of the lads I work with, Bilal Dib, he's really targeting a fight with Cancio. And I think they'd be a great fight, two great fighters. But it's a working class sport at the end of the day, boxing. You know, it hasn't got, you know, mega money in. And, you know, I've never asked for a penny of anyone for sponsorship in my life. It's not really my thing to do. I don't like asking people for stuff. I'd rather just, you know, earn my money and invest the money that I earn back into my career. And that's kind of what I've really done, is every money that I've earned, I invest into my food, into my rent, into giving me the chance to work with Andre. Like, Andre doesn't take a penny off me. He's never took a penny off me in his life. But, you know, they just seem to like me. But that's really where, you know, the money I make through soccer and my media work that I conduct as well, it just goes back into living the New York lifestyle in the way that I want to live it.
How did you get the link up with Andre Rozier?
So I've been helping Michael Emu-Bediako Sr. with his media stuff.
Which is the manager of Comey?
Richard Comey. Yeah. Comey and Duke Micah. So originally when I first come over here, I was trained by someone else. And then I kind of just fell out of love with boxing. I was working a lot back then. Like, more than I am. I was working 7 days a week back then. I just didn't want to box. I just wanted to spend my spare time in the pub. Anyway, when I moved back to New York 6 months ago, I said to Michael, could you possibly, like, link me up with Andre? And he went, yeah. He went, because Richard used to be trained by someone else, so did Duke. And then now, at this point, they'd moved to Andre. So, Michael put me in touch with Richard, who then introduced me to Andre and Seven Simpson, who, I don't know if you remember Joe Green, but it's Joe Green's uncle. He's one of our other trainers in the gym. And basically, I just made Andre laugh. He just thinks I'm really funny. you know, and I'm one of them people who comes in the gym, and, you know, I'm not the most serious person in the world, you know, and they just like me being around the place, you know, because I just provide good entertainment. So Andre just, he just talked to me, but it was Richard and Michael Amu who really, you know, they were the bridge. And then me and Dre just, like, Andre, I spent Christmas Eve with Andre and his whole family. You know, that was kind of the relationship that we established quite early. and I'd never trained with anyone else.
So you train alongside?
Yes, anyway.
So you train alongside Saddam Ali, Duke Micah, Daniel Jacobs, Marco Hook, Chris Algieri. What can you say you've picked up from each of them? Obviously, you know, they're all different styles.
Saddam Ali picked up things about my sense of humour. Really funny kid. Proper funny kid. I love Saddam, and it was good to see what happened at the weekend, because I've got a lot of time for Saddam. Danny, I've watched Danny as close as I can. I haven't spent as much time as I'd like around Danny, but that's simply because he does a lot of stuff in CEA Fitness, which is run by Dave Honig in Port Washington. So I really just keep myself in Brooklyn. Because we have two parts to the camp, and I'm not always in Brooklyn. But with Danny, like, I learned a lot about switching. I learned about how he changes. You know, he's got great variety, and he's got great variety in his defense as well. His movement's fantastic. He's got an excellent jab. Puts his shots together perfectly. Great timing. Doesn't rush. You know what I mean? He doesn't rush. Like, and so I picked up a lot from Danny. And also how he conducts himself outside the ring and the lifestyle he lives. Chris Algieri lifestyle. You know, Chris Algieri's lifestyle is, you know, never seen anyone train and live like him. He's just unbelievable and a very nice person, very intelligent, thinks about what he does. Richard Comey, Duke Micah, the work ethic. They come from nothing at the end of the day. They come from Ghana. They've had nothing growing up. They train. Richard's world champion and he trains like he's so humble. He's not forgot where he's come from, neither's Duke. And they train like they've got nothing. And they've really instilled that in me. Marco Hook, he knows how to have a fight. Boxing goes out the window a lot of the times with Marco, but you know what? He's got a massive heart and he can fight. But there's little tricks and stuff that he does in the ring that I've picked up on. Just little, you know, you could even say brawler style tactics, but there's some science to them. So that's what I've really picked up off him. That's really, there's a few more kids we've got, and, you know, we all buzz off each other, and, you know, I learn more off them than they probably learn off me, but it's a great education in professional boxing, it really is, and that's why I've been able to progress so much in 6 months, being around these type of people and these great trainers that I've had. I'll be honest with you, I'm not going to name names, I could disrespect people, but I've spent, like, years with other trainers and learned more in a day with Andre.
Wow.
That's the truth.
You mentioned, Chris Algieri, you know, former world champion Chris Algieri, that, you know, you've never seen anybody, you know, train or, you know, in terms of lifestyle, be like him. Yeah. Everybody knows that he's a pretty good cook. Has he cooked for you? Have you ate his food?
I haven't, but I've copied some of his recipes. He's just released a cookbook, I think, called The Fighter's Kitchen.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I think that's available on Amazon now. Shout out, Chris. Yeah. My brown paper envelope better be in the gym tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
No. He's a Chris, I've he's always there for advice. He's given me a lot of advice, you know, on my food and not to starve myself, you know, to eat and eat the right things. And he's a great help, Chris. Really nice guy. You know, there aren't many white people called Chris in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, but there are now, and there's two of them. And they just get quite confusing in our gym. And they go, Chris, and two people turn around. So I actually get called Archie in our gym, which is a long story why that I'm called Archie, but everyone just calls me Archie. Chris is... Chris is great cook. I don't know how he eats what he eats and, you know, just the figure he keeps. But I still don't think we've seen the best of Chris Algieri. And I love Tommy Coyle. Great kid. Nice lad. Strong fighter. But I think there's levels to this fight. I think Chris is going to show how good he is on June 1st.
Professional fighter Chris Glover is on the line with us. Who makes his pro debut in the next few months. So Chris, you know, we were also looking into it. Like you mentioned, you also do media on the side. So you have a day job and you also do media for the sport. You write for Boxing Monthly, right?
Yeah. Well, I've contributed to boxing scene for years. I used to be the head of Scotland for the boxing month, for the boxing news when I went to college up in Scotland when I was younger. I was up there from 21 to 24. So I used to cover boxing for boxing news, boxing scene, in my opinion, the best website in boxing. And also, yeah, Boxing Monthly. I do a lot for Boxing Monthly. Great magazine, great people, really in it for the right reasons, and really enjoying working with them, yeah.
Chris, I watched, when I was doing some background, trying to find out some info on you, I watched a video you did with the boxing scene. No, sorry, the Boxing Voice. And the interviewer asked you about how many times you'd had, it sounded like a punishment, like the Black Jesus or something.
Oh, God. Don't mention that.
Oh, man. I want to know what this is.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, I didn't know what it was. So I was kind of like, you know what, I'm going to make a little note and I'll ask him when I get him on the line.
Is this Kanye West?
Yeah. No. I don't know, actually. Kanye West is probably more painful to listen to than Black Jesus. It hurts me ears more listening to Kanye West. But no, so what Black Jesus is it's basically like rubber foam. Okay. So, do you know, like, strong rubber foam that's wrapped in tape? In, like, you know, we call it gaffer tape at home.
Okay.
Like, black tape. So it makes it a lot heavier and stronger. So, and Dre hits us with it if we mess around. And I seem to get it more than anyone. Me and Saddam do. So me and Saddam have started coming up with very inventive places to hide it. But then Dre, like, keeps bribing us by threatening to make, like, a bigger one. It's like getting hit by a pipe, put it that way.
Oh, man, that doesn't sound fun at all.
It really hurts. And I've had a big bruise, like, on my legs and everything from it. But, nah, it's, you know, it's, I, like I said, that's the banter of our gym is, like, I've come up with about 6 different places in our gym to hide it that Andre doesn't know. So, yeah.
You think that's one
and
of the...
And I started slipping and rolling it. So now he'll try and like, hit me on the head with it and I'll slip. I mean, reactions have got so much better thanks to Black Jesus.
It teaches you head movement, right? Lateral movement?
Head movement, lateral movement, footwork, in and out now, you know, stepping off to the side. Like, you tried to hit me in the legs with it the other day and I pivoted off. And I was like, ah, unlucky. it's only a good crack, so... We normally only get it on Wednesdays because we do something called Boxing Rumble on a Wednesday, which is, if you ever watched the old HBO 24/7s or, you know, Road to, I think it was on Road to Derrianchenko versus Jacobs, we do this thing called Boxing Rumble. It's an absolute killer. It's a killer. So, you know, if we're not working hard enough, that's when Black Jesus raises his head and starts whacking us.
Do you think all that kind of builds into the good atmosphere? Because until obviously Danny lost on the weekend, you know, the gym was really thriving. You know, Saddam Ali was having a good run. Duke Micah, Jacobs was obviously on a undefeated streak. Marco Cook, Algieri, Chris Comey's obviously just picked up the IBF.
Yeah, and you know, the gym's still flying. Like we've had, you know, obviously it wasn't a great weekend for the gym with Saddam losing and Danny losing, but. You know, Danny put up a great performance. Saddam didn't have the great. He'd admitted himself. He didn't have the greatest of camps for this fight. Not taking that away from the kid who he boxed. But I thought when Saddam actually boxed, he looked about, he looked 10 levels above him. He just didn't have it in the tank. And I don't know what Saddam's going to do now, but he's a great kid. He's been great for Brooklyn boxing. You know, he's represented his country at the Olympics. He beat Miguel Cotto. I don't really think there's that much less for Saddam to do than he's already done. You know, he's made good money, you know. But whatever Saddam does, you know, he's going to have, you know, the backing of, we're all going to be supporting him. But, you know, it's top talent. Duke Mike is back. He's had contractual issues. They're resolved now. He's back in June, we think. And let me tell you, that kid's going so far. He's such a top draw fighter. Commie. He's got a world title defense coming up in June as well. And then, you know, Algieri at the Garden and then Soft Lad Me is out in August. And we've got Curtis Stevens still knocking around as well. You know, he's just, you know, I've never seen, you know, a one-punch KO merchant in the flesh. I mean, just, you know, like up close. Then him, Teriano Johnson too. I'm not sure what's going on with Teriano at the moment, but, you know, Teriano is good fun as well. I really like him. So, yeah, like I said, and Marco out a week on Friday. And he's just a hilarious human being. What a nice man he is. But he can fight. So, yeah, the gym's, but we didn't have the greatest of weekends. But, you know, Freddie Roach has had, you know, his fair share of horses, hasn't he? And I'd considered Andre Vizier in that elite trainer class. Robert Garcia's had his losses. You know, all gyms go through these little spells, you know, so it's not something that we're worrying about.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're totally right on that. You know, even the best coaches have some bad nights sometimes. So, but it comes with the game. It comes with the game. It comes with the sport. You win some, yeah. You lose some. So it happens. Correct. But, you know, since we kind of touched on it already, you know, let's go into this past Saturday's fight. So May 4th from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas on DAZN. Like you mentioned, your stablemate Daniel Jacobs suffered the unanimous decision loss and lost his IBF middleweight world title against Saul Canelo Alvarez, who now has the IBF, the WBA, and WBC by scores of 115, 113 twice and 116, 112. So overall, what did you think of both Canelo's performance, Daniel Jacobs' performance? Was there anything that stood out to you? Maybe that, you know, did you score it? Did you give it, you know, if you did, what was your score?
I did have Canelo edge in it. You know, I'm not deluded. I'm not going to back, you know, I'm not going to just tell lies because, you know, I'm in the gym with him. But I thought maybe, you know, I thought Andre came up with a great game plan and he really slowed Canelo down and didn't allow Canelo to work. You know, we could have said maybe Danny could have pressed the fight a little bit more in the early rounds and edged it. Who knows, you know, but I thought Dre came up with a great game plan, you know, and it was nearly executed. I don't think anyone's really pushed Canelo. You know, aside from the Golovkin fights, obviously, but in, you know, since Golovkin, you know, no one's really looked that good against Canelo and really took Canelo. What Danny did well is he didn't let Canelo settle, and as you saw, he switched a lot, didn't he? He switched a lot, and that made Canelo constantly reset, and that's how Danny was able to win a lot of the rounds, you know, in the second half of the fight. The only person who also made Canelo constantly reset was Floyd Mayweather. And I'm not comparing Danny to Floyd Mayweather, but I'm saying, though, you know, they've really left a blueprint on how to beat him. And I think that was, you know, the great boxing brain of Danny and also Andre, you know, that allowed that to happen. I'd love to see them do it again at 68. But, you know, the best man won on the night. You know, Canelo landed the cleaner work. He showed he had a great chin when he took that straight left hand. You know, that was a fantastic shot.
Yeah, it was.
You know, and you know, full credit to both fighters. I don't really think there was any losers from that contest. I think there was a winner and a runner-up. I think that's a good way to analyze it.
No, you're right. And I'm glad that you brought up Danny Jacobs switching from, you know, at multiple points throughout the fight from orthodox to southpaw, because I thought, you know, initially when he was doing that, I was like, okay, you know, I switch up the eye level, you know, switch up Canelo's game plan. I thought it was initially a good idea, but I felt and you know, you let me know what you think about this, and then, you know, Mike can also jump in. I felt that when Jacobs switched to southpaw, because he's naturally obviously a orthodox fighter. I felt like Canelo was landing more when he was switching, and I kept saying, I was like, why switch back? I felt like Danny Jacobs had more success when he was in his natural stance, and you know, and that's why I kind of, after a while, I was just like, why doesn't he just stay? I know he just wanted to switch up the eye level for Canelo, which I understood, but I felt like he switched and he stayed too long in the southpaw stance, that likely lost him some rounds and lost him some points throughout the fight. What do you think about that?
Well, Danny does that a lot in the gym. I've seen him obviously sparring. You know, I've seen him sparring like Nikita. I can't say his second name, but he's with Matt Truman. They think quite a lot of him.
The young blonde kid.
Yeah, him. He's a nice kid as well. He can fight too. I didn't even know who he was when I was in the gym, and someone was like, "He's a match room, man, is he?" I didn't know. but you know, seen him spar Curtis as well, and you know, and the switching works for Danny. And I can tell you from my own example. I sparred Duke Micah. Well, was number two in the world, now number five in the world. I sparred Duke, what, twice, sometimes three times a week now. Duke does it as well. I sparred Kigalad years ago, and he does it. And you know what? It makes you reset. So you can't get your shots off. What's Canelo's best attribute? It's how he puts his shots together and his hand speed. You know, so that's what Danny's plan was to take Canelo out of his rhythm. Maybe he could have done it in more of an efficient way, you know, arguably, but I understand why he did it, and I agree in why he did it, and I think that's why he made the fight so close. Maybe he could have just, you know, like I said, you know, the efficiency of it or the variety of how he did it. But I'd say Daniel Jacobs is one of the most complete fighters I've ever been around. He knows a lot more about boxing than I do. So, you know, and Andre, you know, is, like I said before, he's one of the best trainers in the world. So I understand why he did it. Maybe he could have done it, you know, more efficiently. Who knows? But like I said, I think there was a winner and there was a runner-up. There wasn't a loser in that fight. And I think Daniel Jacobs at super middleweight will clear it out.
What did you think, Chris, of Jacobs just coming in at more of his natural weight than, you know, sticking to the rehydration clause? Because me and Danny were going through, you know, going back and forth on texts, you know, when we came to fight day. One of us kind of agreed with it. The other one was kind of saying it was unprofessional.
Yeah, well, I said, if you, I think you said, Matt, you'd seen an interview with myself in the past, and I said at the time to Ron Goodall, who's also got Fighter IQ, great interviewer, he works with the Boxing Voice, I said to Ron at the time, I said, when Julius Ndongo fought Terence Crawford for the IBF, IBO, and WBO world titles, and I think that might have been all of the titles, that might have been the lineal fight, I'm not sure. But that fight, there was no rehydration clause. So, at the end of the day, a weigh-in's a weigh-in. You know, you shouldn't have a rehydration clause. You know, I agree with the principles behind it, but it just, you might as well just do it on the day weigh-in. If you don't want a rehydration clause, you know, instead of a rehydration clause, if you care about what you weigh the next day, just do the weigh-in on the day. Obviously, that's not a done thing in boxing, but, you know, in, you know, the 60s and 70s it was. You just weigh-in on the day. You know, I think all this, you know, if you can have a day before weighing, well, what's the point in having it if you want to check the weight on the day? I think Danny's plan originally was to never bother with it, and he was going to take the financial hit. I don't blame him for it. I don't think it was unprofessional. I think he's, you know, he's obviously trying to get a competitive edge by coming in at his natural weight. He's an absolute monster for middleweight. Like I said, I think this is his last fight at middleweight. So I don't blame him for doing what he did at all. I'd have done the same. Like, I'm a big kid for... I'm 5'7". Like, 5'7", 122 pounds, and I might go down to 118. See how my body is. I'm not going to have someone tell me, oh, we can only be 128 the next day when I'm going to rehydrate to 138. Nah. You know, I wouldn't do it. I'd take the financial hit.
Do you think Canelo and his team were insistent on putting that rehydration clause into the contract because of when Jacobs fought Triple G, he didn't show up to the next day weigh-in, and he, you know, there was already that issue. So do you think Canelo was like, you know what, like, let's just throw it in there? Because, I mean, when he fought Triple G, yeah, the IBF next day weigh-in within the 10 pounds, you know, he obviously didn't show up for that. So you think it was more for that, like a precaution? Like, okay, well, if he doesn't show up, then at least he's going to pay me. So you think it was more because of that?
I think it was a win-win situation from Canelo. If he doesn't show up, he gets $1 million. If he does show up, he's going to be weight drained and he's going to be lethargic and drained in the fight. So it was a win-win situation. And Canelo, you know, Canelo's team, basically the fight hinged on that. So Danny accepted it. So that's why, you know, I think it was a good tactical move from Canelo's team. it was, like I said, it was a win-win situation, smart business. I don't think they expected him to ever, you know, actually do it.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
But just paid for that Bugatti, hasn't it?
No, you're right. You're right. But like you said, you know, I had Canelo winning. Mike, who'd you have?
I had Canelo winning. Yeah.
I had Canelo winning. So it looks like we all, you know, saw we're pretty much in line with the same opinion here. But like you said, Chris, earlier, Canelo did take some shots. Jacobs, there was a couple of shots that he landed that pretty much snapped Canelo's head. It could have went like in a total circle, 360.
That hook that Chris said, I think it was in the 11th, where Canelo kind of rode it a little bit. He kind of saw it coming and turned his head. Well, yeah, that
he still got hit hard with it, though. Like, you know, like you said, Chris, like, you know, Jacobs landed, there was quite a few shots throughout the fight that he landed on Canelo. And it seemed like Jacobs is, you know, not only was his, like, did I think he had success when he was in his natural stance, orthodox, excuse me, but when he had Canelo against the ropes is when he really started unloading on him.
Mm. It was a different type of Canelo, I think in the last three fights, we've actually seen three different styles of Canelo. The first kind of Triple G fight where he kind of countered. The second Triple G fight where he kind of took the fight to Triple G. And then this one was kind of like a very much more of a chess match, tactical type of Canelo where you can see he definitely worked on his defense because he knew that Jacobs had such a good jab, which, you know, Chris said. So he's really evolved, hasn't he, over the last few years?
No, absolutely.
He's a tremendous fighter. He's probably the most complete fighter in boxing at the moment. And someone will probably tell me, no, Lomachenko is unbelievable at what he does. I've seen Lomachenko in the flesh on I've been fortunate to be ringside for him on a couple of occasions. And, you know, he's just a freak. You know, I don't really know what you can describe him as because I don't think there's ever been anyone like him. For the boxing traditionalist, you know, Canelo Alvarez can do pretty much anything. He can power punch, he can sharpshoot, he can counter punch, he can box and move. He's got a good jab, good head movement, got a heart, got a chin. He's got everything. You know, he's got good reflexes. Yeah, he doesn't have that, you know, unbelievable, scary, spooky ability that, you know, Lomachenko has. But Lomachenko's a, you know, never mind a once-in-a-generation fighter. He's once in a, you know, millennium fighter. Fighters like that only come around once every 100 years. He's a completely different stat. You know, he's a completely different to anything we've ever seen. But Canelo is probably the most complete fighter in boxing, I'd say, at the moment. Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Especially with his resume of work as well. And Lomachenko, like, has got that different style compared to everyone else, like you touched on, but you know, Canelo just seems to get those wins, and he's got, what, 55 fights already at the age of 28, nearly 29, and some of the names on that resume is unbelievable.
Right.
Yeah, like Shane, you know, he didn't fight a bad Shane Mosley. I thought, like, that was really, you know, for someone of his age to dominate Shane Mosley. I know it wasn't, you know, a prime Shane Mosley, but, you know, people, you know, don't give him really credit for that. You know, people forget how good Ryan. I remember him fighting Ryan Rhodes. Yeah. You know, and I'm not sure, you know, Danny, you might not know Ryan Rhodes, but Michael.
Yeah, I think he follows us, doesn't he?
He does. He actually follows the podcast.
He follows the podcast, so yeah.
Cool fella, Ryan Rhodes. Proper sound fella. Yeah, nice man. I really, it's been a pleasure to be around Ryan Rhodes. But, you know, when he fought Matthew Atten as well, and, you know, just, you know, took Matthew Atten apart. And, you know, this was when he was a kid. He was a 20-year-old kid, you know, fighting top draw fighters. And, you know, Matthew Atten fought, you know, IBO world title challenger, you know, Ryan Rhodes, I think, was the youngest person to win the British title outright. So, and the British title, in my opinion, still one of the best titles, all the Lonsdale belt, still probably one of the hardest titles to win in the world.
One of the most beautiful, one of the most prettiest belts in the world as well, the British title.
Correct.
It is.
You know,
it is.
People don't give him credit. I think he doesn't get the credit he deserves for some of the people that he has, you know, he has beaten. You know, I think the future for Canelo Alvarez, it's a very, very, very interesting and bright one.
No, you're right. And then, you know, wrapping up, obviously, on that main event, Chris and Mike, I want to know your guys' opinion. Is Canelo number one pound for pound now?
I'll go first. We kind of touched on it. If you go in terms of what they've actually done and their resume as a professional,
right,
I would say definitely Canelo. Lomachenko is probably more pleasing on the eye, but he just doesn't have that body of work, you know, and not to, I'm talking just as a professional, you know, his body of work as an amateur really stepped to the side for that,
right,
in my opinion.
What do you think, Chris?
I think he's number three.
So I'm assuming you have Crawford and Lomachenko above him.
One and two, Crawford, Lomachenko, one, Crawford two, Canelo three. Just think, just how they've moved through the weight classes more, you know, in the way that they have. I think, you know, like Lomachenko is not a big, he's my size, he's not, how he's dominating lightweight shows how good he is. Terence Crawford, I've seen Lomachenko up close, and the second fight, I've never seen Canelo fight up close, like, you know, ringside. I've never seen him ringside, but I've seen Terence Crawford up close, and those two fighters really stand out for me as just special. Obviously, Canelo, you know, is, you know, a very valiant third, and I'd go as far as putting, in my opinion, a future heavyweight champion of the world is Alexander Usyk. I'll be number four.
Oh, yeah, I know. You can't forget about Usyk. Usyk's, he's a monster.
Fucking,
But, you know, moving on that card, you know, just to touch on the undercard fights real quick.
Yeah.
Virgil Ortiz Jr. actually got the 13th knockout and the 13th win of his career as he knocked out Mauricio Herrera in the third round. And Herrera's never been knocked out. Did you catch that performance, Chris? What did you think about it?
I did. I don't want to take nothing away from the kid. You know, it's a good victory for him. But I think Herrera was a shell of his former self.
Yeah.
I think when Saddam boxed him, Saddam didn't have a great camp for that fight. He was very drained going into that fight. I was with Saddam. That's when I first started training with them all, was when Saddam, it was actually the week before Saddam boxed Herrera, I started training with all, you know, like, that's when I started training, you know, in Andre's Havoc camp. And that's when I started training with them. And, he didn't really have the greatest of camps for that, but he still beat Herrera. And like I said, that Ortiz Jr., you know, he can fight. You know, he's a talented kid, but I really think I think it's just the end of the line for Herrera. He's got him at the right time. Good matchmaking. But hopefully Golden Boy keep a lid on him and don't blow him out of proportion like they seem to do with everyone these days. You know, it's all, you know, I think, like, Brian Garcia, you know, he's a great fighter, but they need to cool these hype trains because they're just getting a bit silly, you know. And I don't, like, Del Hoya, you know, I love Del Hoya as a fighter, fantastic fighter, but every fighter he seems to have, you know, he just goes around disrespecting other fighters. They're not as good, you know, when they haven't done anything yet, really. You know, just cool your jet flat, just chill.
No, you're right. You know, Herrera was a shell of his former self. But I think Ortiz, regardless, he did what he had to do as the co-main event of a Canelo fight. He knocked him out in ridiculous fashion. He did what he had to do regardless of the matchmaking. Mm-hmm. He looked good.
Yeah, correct. Like, he did his job. You know, he obviously trained hard, listened, done his work in the gym, and he's he's got a good victory for himself, so fair play to him. In my personal favourite, you know, well, not favourite, but my personal most impressive performance of the night come from Britain's John Ryder, who produced an excellent victory. And people forget, the person to push Billy Joe Saunders the most was John Ryder.
Chris, what do you think if Jacobs goes up to 168, Jacobs, John Ryder, the winner gets Callum Smith?
With all due respect, I don't think Daniel Jacobs wants to fight. Callum Smith is a great fighter, but he doesn't seem to be like an amazing, you know, massive, you know, he's not going to sell out Anfield anytime soon. And that's no disrespect intended meant at all. That's the reality of it. You know, he hasn't really captivated the scouts boxing public or the British boxing public in the same way Tony Bellew did with Goodison Park. I think Daniel Jacobs is in a position where he can pick who he wants to fight. I think if Daniel Jacobs wants to fight Callum Smith, he'll fight him. And I think it'd be a tremendous fight and they're two great fighters. I'd like to see Daniel Jacobs fight Chris Eubank.
That'd be kind of intriguing.
I think Jacobs would take him apart, I think.
Yeah, I think Jacobs would take him apart, but it's intriguing, especially if they fight in the UK.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe 164 or something like that, you know, if because I don't really see Eubank Jr. still. I still don't see him as a real super middleweight. You know, Jacobs moving up, maybe that, you know, maybe they could meet in the middle or if they wanted to do it. You know, I'd love to see that for the IBO, you know, for the IBO world title. That'd be a great fight. And I know everyone at the IBO did it's a very good organisation. I think it gets a bit of hard press at times. I don't remember them doing anything wrong in boxing. You know, I think they get just the brunt, you know, the bad end of the stick because of the actions of some of the governing bodies who decide to have about 8 different world champions. You know, but that's a story for another day.
No, you're right. And then, you know, just quickly touching them back on John Ryder. That was for the interim WBA World Super Middleweight title, and he got the TKO in the third round against. All right, Mike, you pronounce this. Help me out.
Bilal Akaway. Is that how you pronounce it? From Australia?
You're right.
I just called him the Australian kid.
The Australian kid.
Yeah, him.
It was a great win for John, though. He looked strong. He kind of just went in and dominated him. Just went in, pushed the guy back, and you could see early on it wasn't going to last long.
That's the thing. It was someone with, you know, a very blown up record. Not really fought anyone against a proper professional.
Yeah.
And that was the difference. It was a season top level pro. I think John Ryder's still improving under Tony Sims. Matchroom have had him since I think he turned pro. And Matchroom have done a fantastic job with John Ryder. And like I said, you know, I'd like to see him rematch Rocky Fielding.
Yeah,
I think there's unfinished business there, yeah. And who's the WBA? Sorry, I should really know this, but who's the WBA? It's Callum. Is Callum the super champion?
Yeah, he's got them all, hasn't he?
Have they got a regular champion? Because I know they've got about 8 different belts. You can't keep up with them.
It was Rocky until Canelo beat him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if there was an availability for the regular title, it'd be good to see him. You know, John Ryder contest it, maybe he deserves a fight with Callum Smith. Maybe give him that fight with Callum Smith. You know, if Callum's short of options, mate, I'm sure that'd do decent numbers in either the O2 in London or the Echo Arena.
The WBA have availability for all types of belts, Chris. Interim, you know, gold, silver, bronze, copper.
Maybe I could be the WBA champion.
That's the one you need to go for. That's the best option.
I don't even think there's any other super bantamweights in Harlem. You know, and there's probably not that many people who walk around at 122 in Harlem apart from one of the crackheads. So.
You're right.
And we can have that for the WBA Harlem title. That's where I live. I live, it depends who I'm talking to. If I'm speaking to someone I'm trying to impress, I tell them I live in the Upper West Side, which technically I do. But if I'm speaking to someone normally, it's just West Side Harlem. Which I do. I live in, Morningside Heights, which is where Harlem meets the Upper West Side. I live right in the middle of it. But it's not like the, you know, the traditional ghettos that you know, that people generalize. Harlem's a nice place to live now, especially on the West Side, because it's by Columbia University. So it's gone very gentrified. So not a bad place to live anymore.
Absolutely. And then, you know, since we touched on all the belts for the WBA, real quick, Joseph Jojo Diaz Jr. also stopped in the 7th round, Freddy Fonseca, and this is for Mike's new favorite belt, the WBA Gold Super Featherweight title. And then Jojo Diaz calls out IBF champion Tevin Farmer.
Cool fight.
Does Jojo Diaz get that fight next, Chris? What do you think? Does he deserve a title shot following this win?
Yeah. I think Jojo Diaz is a fantastic fighter. I followed him really since he turned pro. Been really impressed with him. I think he's got a very good work ethic. If I can't see Farmer getting in the ring with, you know, Javonta anytime soon. But Jojo Diaz, yeah, I'd like to see him fight. I'd like to see him fight Tevin Farmer. You know, I think Tevin Farmer showed that he's a good fighter, but you know, he needs to keep working. He's not finished. I don't think he's really at the level maybe he thinks he is. He's a tremendous fighter. I'm not taking nothing away from him, but you know, John O'Carroll pushed him pushed him to the limits at times. And John O's a great little fighter, nice kid as well. But I think Jojo Diaz would give him all sorts of problems. I think it's a great fight. So yeah, it's one of them. I'd really be interested in seeing. With them both being on the zone, it should be relatively quite straightforward to me. So, but did you said he won the gold title, didn't he?
Yeah, WBA gold super featherweight. So it's a newer title.
I think Cancio's the super featherweight champion, isn't he? So I think a fight with Cancio is probably more likely in that, you know, with him going down the WBA route, and then maybe then a fight with Farmer, or try and force a fight with Javonta. I think that's a possibility. I think it'd be a good fight. I think Jojo's quality.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that division's got good talent right now. But, you know, moving on to previews of this weekend, we have quite a few cards. We'll touch on there was also a card on Saturday, the Stockton Arena in Stockton, California on ESPN. Artur Beterbiev, also 14-0, 14 knockouts, just like Virgil Ortiz Jr. He KOs in the fifth round, Hot Rod. I always call him Hot Rod because that's his nickname. I never want to pronounce his name. I just call him Hot Rod. And that was for the IBF light heavyweight title. And also on that card, Jerwin and Cajas got the KO in the seventh round over Mike, jump in. Pronounce that.
Raichi Funai.
Funai. And that was
31-8, the IBF World Super Flyweight. Funai stopped on the doctor's advice at the beginning of the seventh. That was a great fight.
You caught that?
He's a top draw He's top draw that year. And I can't say his name, but he's a top draw fighter, him. And that Artur Beterbiev, if I find him in bed with me bed, I'd tuck him in. I wouldn't just tuck him in. I'd go and make him a cup of tea as well. if I found him in bed with my expert, I'd say keeper. good luck. You know, that'd be his hardest fight to take. But he's a tremendous fighter. He's, you know, and I thought Callum Johnson really showed how good Callum Johnson is against him. Callum Johnson's top draw fighter. But that Beterbiev, you know, he's a different level. I'd love to see him from Kovalev fight.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that'd
absolutely
be a good fight.
And, previewing this weekend's fights. So this Saturday, May 11th, from the Convention Center in Tucson, Arizona, also on ESPN, we got a rematch. Miguel Perchel, WBC World Super Featherweight Champion, goes up against Francisco Vargas. Perchel beat Vargas for his WBC title via 11th round knockout in January of 2017. I'm excited for this fight. I think this. I hope it's better than the first one because I like Perchel. I think I'm picking Perchel in this. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'd agree with you. Like I think Vargas, he's been about, hasn't he? And you know he's a good strong fighter. But you know maybe his best days are I don't know. I'm not sure really. You know he's a good fighter, but he seems to have been around for quite a while now. And I just don't know if he's really, you know, making those adjustments to, you know, really improve and, you know, become, you know, an elite level fighter. But I think hopefully the styles gel a bit better this time. I think they've worked each other out a little bit. So, you know, let's hope that, it's a better scrap. But, I'm not sure Vargas has got it in him to pull it off.
You're right. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. And then also on that card, another world title rematch between Emmanuel Navarrete and Isaac Dogbe for the WBO World Super Bantamweight title. So this, you know, I'm sure you guys know, because we had talked about this on a previous show. Dogbe was the favorite in the first fight. and he got upset. That was one of the upsets of the year. That was last year.
Not if you knew what went on in his training camp, it wasn't.
Yeah, that's what they were touching on. They were saying for this fight, he's had a better training camp. He's had better sparring.
The last training camp he was sparring is 6'3", Dad.
Yeah, I was going to say, he used to keep it all in-house, didn't he?
You know, it was just like, you know, I'm not going to slag the kid. He's a good fighter. But you need to sort that camp out. Like, and at the media day, someone told me, I'm not going to say who told me, but someone at the media day went, he's had a shit camp for this fight. Excuse my language.
That's all right. We're a podcast. Like, it's all right. You can say whatever you want. Go ahead.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, they said he had that, you know, he didn't have a good camp for the fight. And I was like, someone part of his team told me that. And he's running around shouting, Neho, Neho, Neho. Maybe you should put all that energy into like some good sparring.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, Garner's got a very special place in my heart, you know, with Richard Comey and Duke Mike and Michael Mubediarco, you know, wherever he. Bracelets every day, which is in the Ghana colours, which me friend Kimberly Curran from back home sent me. It's finally all, and you know, positive energy sources. But the point is, you know, I want to see Ghanaian boxers do well. Ghanaian boxers come from nothing. You know, where Dogbo has been given great opportunities to do something, and he's allowed people to mess his camp up that badly that he lost a world title. That is not a good reflection on Ghanaian boxing. Do you know what I mean? So,
right.
I hope he's, you know, corrected those errors, but I'm not convinced. I won't be convinced until I see him victorious that he has. Right. I think Navarrete was underestimated. I think he's a good fighter. He's awkward, 5'7", is my size, you know, maybe a bit taller than me, actually, you know, for a super bantam. Really awkward, got a good jab. Good feet. So I think it could be another cagey fight. But like I said, I don't know. I think Dogbo needed to make wholesale changes, and I genuinely don't believe he has. But I hope he proves me wrong. I hope he proves me wrong. But I can see a repeat of the first fight.
We'll see on Saturday for that one. And then also on Saturday, more boxing on Fox over here in the United States from the Eagle Bank Arena in Fairfax, Virginia.
This is the fight of the weekend.
This is probably the fight of the week. You're right. You're right. That's what I was thinking. The unified super welterweight world champion, Jarrett Hurd, 23-0, goes up against Julian J. Rock Williams, 26-1-1.
Yeah.
I'm picking Hurd just because Hurd is just such a tank. But I like Julian Williams. And like you said, I'm expecting it to be the fight of the week, even though, like, you know, there's other cards, especially on the ESPN cards, that have some good matchups. But I'm leaning towards this one as the fight of the week. What do you think, Chris?
I think this could be the fight of the year.
Oh, wow.
Because Jarrett Hurd's never in a bad fight. J-Rock will bring it. He's going to come to fight. He's going to come to win. He's going to come to fight. And he's going to go, he's preparing to go through hell to win that fight. Jarrett Hurd doesn't do bad fights. He's non-stop action. And, you know, I was speaking to Ed Levine from the IBO before, and he said, I love these fights being for IBO world titles because this is what boxing fans want. This is a proper world title fight. This isn't a, you know, and he didn't say this. This is just my opinion. You know, it's not a gold title or a silver title or an interim title.
Yeah.
This is a proper world title fight. It's a proper unified world title fight. This is what it's about. A great contender, a great fighter, good pedigree, fighting against, you know, an all-action, brash young upstart in Jarrett Hurd, two respectful kids as well. It's going to be a fantastic fight. I think Jarrett's just going to have a little bit too much, and I think he could push for the late stoppage. But don't be surprised to see him hit the deck and get back off the canvas to win. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm like you said, I'm expecting it to be a good fight, but I am picking Hurd.
Same.
Yeah.
So
I think Hurd just be too big, too strong, and
he's like a tank.
Yeah, exactly. Just nothing ever seems to.
I walked past him the other day, you know, in the garden, And I was there, right up there, mate, the weather like. You know,
I don't know how he makes weight.
Murray Shuker is another one. How he makes 140, he's a unit, him.
He struggled last time, didn't he, Maurice?
Yeah, he's fine. Jack Catterall have been sold. Next. So that Jack's a monster as well at 140, so it's a great fight, that.
That's insane. But, you know, hitting the final lap here, probably the most shocking news of the week, maybe of the month, maybe, I don't know, maybe the year, who knows? Triple G announces his new trainer after leaving Abel Sanchez after 9 years together, pretty much since his debut on American soil. So Triple G selects Jonathan Banks as his new trainer.
Tom Lawford select Jonathan Banks?
You know what? You're right. You know what? Obviously, we're all speculating. Everybody's all speculating until we get like confirmation from either Tom Lawford or Triple G or his camp. But that's highly likely that because of the K2 connection, Triple G was initially promoted by K2. There's a Klitschko connection. Lawford,
Cecilia Breakus is also.
Lawford was managing director of K2. So it makes sense. You know, Lawford probably recommended it and he was just like, yeah, let's just throw him.
And also, you're forgetting, I think Golovkin still lives in Germany.
Yeah.
So Banks has always held the camps with Klitschko in the Austrian Alps. So he doesn't have to fly all the way to Big Bear. He can just go to Austria. He'll probably go home over a weekend and see his family.
That's true. Yeah.
People forget. See, this is one thing that I can tell that probably a lot, with all due respect to, you know, a lot of media guys, they don't know these factors that go into training camps. I've been in training camps. I've just been in Danny Jacobs' training camp. I've spent Anikel Brooks' training camp in the past in Fuerteventura. I understand, you know, I've obviously spent, you know, I'm quite close to Danny Vaughan, and Dominic Vaughan, his son's one of my very close friends. So I understand what goes on within training camps and how hard it is for kids, you know, fighters to be away from their families for such long periods of time. And with Marco Hooker at the moment, Richard Comey, Duke Michael hasn't seen his baby boy for a year because he's been in, you know, training constantly and been, you know, there's been issues with that. But I understand these factors. So if a fighter can be closer to home and have an elite level training camp with all the perks of, you know, the Austrian Alps, the altitude, and also a factor is he's been training at altitude for 9 years. Austrian Alps, that's where Banks trains, and it's also one of the few places in Europe with great altitude. So for me, that makes a lot of sense for him. At this point in his career, he's going to make a bit of money. He's going to have a couple more big fights. And, you know, probably wants to be comfortable. He's comfortable now, you know what I mean? So he can work things around him. He doesn't have to work around other people anymore.
Chris, what do you think of Banks as a trainer? Because he seems to have just been, you know, handed 3 golden eggs. You know, he got Cecilia Breakers, who was kind of ready-made. Klitschko, Triple G. So unless he's doing something amazing behind the scenes that we don't know about.
Manny Steward rated them.
Yeah.
That's enough for me.
Yeah.
If Manny Steward rated them, I'm going what he said. That fellow was a legend and God bless him. If Manny Steward gave someone the blessing, chances are they probably know the shit.
Yeah, you're totally right. That's what I was thinking at first. People were like, you know, kind of talking smack about his choice and everything, but I was like, well, you know, Emmanuel Stewart, one of the best trainers of all time. So that's exactly what I thought as well.
Jonathan Banks came through the Kronk and everything in Detroit. So,
right.
You know, and the thing is, people forget about the Kronk. People just automatically associate the Kronk with Manny Stewart.
Right.
There was loads of other great trainers in the Kronk and great fighters in the Kronk. And that's, it's kind of like, there's a lot of, like, I'm not going to go and compare them like for like, but there's a lot of similarities between our gym and the Kronk. We're both in a dungeon. It's roasting, like, you know, it's 90 degrees in there, 80 degrees, like the Kronk was. But we don't just have one trainer. We have Terence Simpson. Like I said, he was a great fighter in his day. Could have done more, but just hated the business and didn't pursue it. But he had Joe Green, you know. And look at Joe Green, what an amateur he was. Could have done, probably should have been a world champion as a pro. Right. Lenny Wilson, great pad man, unbelievable pad man. You know, great trainer as well. And then obviously Uncle Andre, you know, Andre Vizier, you know, a great trainer. You know, and then we have another side, you know, and Gary Stark as well is around our camp too.
Right.
Fantastic trainer. So there are, you know, like Dre will go away for a few weeks, and I've been with Terence for like, I've been with Terence for the best part of 3 weeks. It's been great. Loved it. Learned loads in the last 3 weeks. Just me and T. And that was the same with the Kronk, and that was obviously what Emmanuel Stewart embodied, so it had to be passed on to someone. And obviously Banks, you know, we trusted Banks enough to pass on Klitschko to him. So like I said, I understand the logic behind it in a way that probably not a lot of people do because they've never been in that environment.
Right. No, you're absolutely...
And that's no disrespect to anyone, by the way. It's not their fault they haven't been in that environment. I just think people should make really understand what they're talking about before they make an opinion.
No, you're absolutely right.
That goes for anything in life.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. And, you know, I don't disagree with any of that. So, well, you know, we'll see how it goes. You know, coming up in June is the first fight. But, you know, once again, Chris Glover makes his professional debut in the next few months. First ever bout. So, you know, we want to thank you again, Chris, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Especially calling in over from the East Coast. The floor is yours right now. Go ahead and plug, you know, your social media, your fights coming up, anything you got, go for it, man.
Well, I've got my fight, obviously. It's great to be getting back in the ring after, you know, being out for, it'll be nearly 2 years. I won a box for, you know, and a box, my last fight was against an ex-pro. It was an unlicensed fight, and I stopped him, but he was a good kid, you know, I had a good performance that night, but this is going to be, you know, I think if someone's a paying customer, they're entitled to the money, entitled to their opinion, sorry, but no one's contributing anything to my life, and I think the only people who are really entitled to an opinion on my career at the moment are the people who are currently around me and seeing what I'm doing every day in the gym. I'm not the same fighter that I was 2 years ago. I'm not the same fighter that I was 6 months ago. And I'm probably going to be a better fighter. In fact, I will be a better fighter come by the time I make my pro debut. So all I want to be is judged on my next performance. You know, and I'm just really going to do my best. And unfortunately, I lost my best friend 2 weeks ago, Bradley Welsh. And it's just for him now. So, you know, I'm just... you know, that's my driving spirit now for this fight. It's not about me anymore, really. It's about him, and people can say what they want. And I've had a lot of lovely messages, and I've had some people saying I'm shit, and all right, sweet, great. What are you doing with your life? You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's, you know what I mean? I'm like, okay, I'm shit, yeah. You know, and if you're going out your way to have a go with someone, you know, a 25-year-old lad, had no family over here, moved over to try and pursue a dream and follow the path of professional boxing to the best of his ability, then you need to go and find some hobbies or something. You know, I think it's pretty funny. They make me laugh. But like I said, I'm just giving it my all. I've got great people around me. I'm very grateful for it. You know, and I keep everyone updated, you know, social media, just Twitter, Chris Glover 28. Same on Instagram, you know, and obviously, you know, I post a lot of my media stuff on there as well, so I'm always doing something in boxing, you know. I'm work alongside the Maloney twins in Australia. They're fantastic fighters,
right?
I like to think I produce some really interesting content. I've just done one on the Golden Gloves champion in New York, Christian Cangalosi, who won at 152. He's from Sicily, doesn't speak English.
Right.
Or not. You know, just a little thing. You know, I love boxing. Boxing's what I love. And I just want to give back to this sport in the ring, prove what I believe in my, you know, I believe in myself. And I want to show that my belief isn't misguided. I want to show people that you can come back from shit times in your life and make something in your life, even when you think it's too late. You can do it, because I've been through my right. share a shit that I've brought on myself. And I just want to, you know, prove that, you know, you can turn it around. You don't have to be a super talented person like Tyson Fury with all the money in the world to do it. You can just be a normal lad who didn't have that much money, you know, but made it happen for himself, just believed in myself. So that's really my driving force, and that's all I want to do. And, like, you know, one fight at a time, you know, my first intention in my professional career is to keep my head on my shoulders and not have someone punch it off.
No, absolutely.
I just want to hit the ground running, get my first win under my belt, keep improving, stay in the gym, and what happens, happens.
Right.
I just want to give a shout out to Mike Leonardi as well at Victory Sports and Entertainment. You know, he works with Jose Pedraza and Buddy Jack. Been absolutely fantastic help for me.
Absolutely.
Since I've been over there, and obviously, of course, Havoc Sports, you know, Andre Vizier, just been fantastic. And Richard Comey, all the boys, yeah, they've really helped me. So I'm not going to say stay tuned, I'm going to be a world beater. I'm not. But if you want to see someone who's going to get in there, have a fight, give it his all, give it 100%, and probably go and have a drink with, take the opponent for a pint after it, then, yeah, come. Yeah, feel free to tune in.
Awesome.
And I appreciate everyone who does send me the nice messages and supports me, because it means the world to me.
Awesome. So well, you. We wish you the best of luck, Chris, in your professional debut. Thanks again for jumping on episode 32 of The Last Round. You know, follow him at ChrisGlover28 on Twitter, Instagram. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Mike, I know you're going to just throw in, rate us 5 stars on iTunes and stuff like that. So I beat you to it. But once again, you know, in honor of, you know, Cinco de Mayo, Canelo winning, and because, you know, it's 2-1 tonight, Viva Mexico, yeah, and God save the Queen. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This